Okay, and we are back. I'm going right now across the Pacific to Japan to talk to Benjamin Fulford, who has been appearing on this program lately with some extraordinary information. It's been a couple months since we heard from him, but I'm running a story now. It's up there, I guess posted a day or two ago now, about Asia, the dollar, and the economy. Welcome back to the program, Ben.
Well, it's nice to be back.
Thank you, sir. You're up on this, of course, having been for 8 years the Asia-Pacific editor, business editor of Forbes magazine. You are one of the most wise and accomplished journalists in the field anywhere, and I'm going to just tick off a couple of headlines that I'm sure you've seen. Toyota sales up. Ford slips again. Chrysler chops four models and 12,000 more hourly jobs. 14% of its workforce, Chrysler announced today, is being laid off. Western banks suffer big losses. Stocks tumble. Citicorp may be, quote, short of capital. And the Fed pumps another $41 billion into the U.S. economy. And those stories just from today. Is this the end, Ben?
Well, we have to really, when you talk about economics, the important thing is to understand the fundamental point of economics, which is this. We are in a ball of rock surrounded by a thin layer of gas hurtling through the void. We have to decide whether we're going to sit there on this ball of rock killing each other, or if we're going to do something else, like try to figure a way to get off this ball of rock and expand into the universe. And so the basis of economics is deciding what humans do. And the people who have been deciding are morally bankrupt.
You mean Alan Greenspan is not a friend of ours?
Well, the families that own the central banks have become, if you look at their actions, criminally insane.
That sums it up nicely.
You know, what are they doing? They're spending $600 million a year on military-industrial mass murder in the United States while
right.
people are going hungry and infrastructure
right.
is falling apart.
Right.
Is that really how Americans want to, you know, spend their time and energy?
Well, it truly is insanity by any measure. You're right.
And so what's happened is the Asians have decided, look, enough is enough. You guys, wake up. We don't want to finance your killing anymore. You got to remember, for example, the Japanese, they've, for 60 years, they've been sending the Americans some nice cars and televisions and radios. And they've been getting return of some fancy IOUs, you know? And they're saying, wait a minute, you know, maybe this isn't really what we want anymore.
Uh-huh.
They cannot take their money out, really, in the sense that, for example, if you own a factory in the United States, you can't just take that factory and move it to Japan. But they can certainly stop financing the American government. Or they can ask them, say, look, you know, we don't want to finance you if you're just going to go around killing people. We'll finance you if you want to terraform Mars or set up a moon colony
mm-hmm.
or save the environment. But
mm-hmm.
we're sick and tired of your insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happened is the Asian banks have been dumping their dollars.
How long has this been going on? Now, I'm going to go into this a little detail. There's how much money in dollars is cumulatively, approximately, held over there between Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, and China? What's the treasure chest? Do we know?
I would say roughly. I'm sorry. You know, there's a lot of the numbers aren't
four,
but I would say $14 trillion.
Okay, I was going to say three to four, and it was 10 before. So okay. 13, yeah, what, something over
well,
10
Japanese
trillion.
The Japanese have 5 trillion, I know that.
It's over 10 trillion, easily.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you say they're dumping them, they don't want to crash the American economy completely because the rest of their dollars will be worthless. So they've been taking them out, I guess, incrementally, geometrically. They've been pulling out more and more, putting more pressure on it. But they can't just yank the rug out from under the U.S. or the dollar becomes kindling wood, so much paper starter.
Well, actually, they can if they want to.
And then what happens?
See,
And then what happens?
Well, then you have to. You got to remember, you still have your factories, you still have your know-how, you still have everything there, but you have to stop and say, "Wait a minute, you know, we have to figure out a new way of doing things."
They all have Chinese names.
Well, it's not really an issue of Chinese or anything. It's just a question of, you know, the American people realizing that the world is tired of war. And that they don't want you to spend your money on war anymore. We'll finance anything else.
That's right. We've only killed, Ben, in the last 4 years, 1.2 million Iraqis. The last figure I saw was of George Bush, Cheney, his Zionist handlers, are killing 10,000 Iraqis a month on any given month. So, yes, how long does this go on?
And the other thing is, they have this, you know, I don't know if they don't seem to realize that people are on to them. They have been exposed. Nobody is being fooled. They think they're going to, you know, start a war with, you know, Iran and then provoke Russia and China into fighting America, the U.S. and Germany and get everybody to kill each other. Well, people aren't that stupid. What's going to happen is they're going to kill the entire leadership of the Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg, all the Rockefellers, all the Rothschilds, the Schiffs, all those people were going to be wiped out totally if they don't wake up and realize that their game is over.
Mm-hmm.
People are on to them.
Is this something that you see in the Asian media now? Is this talked about, Ben? Is this kind of an open awareness now that the game is over as it affects them? They're not going to play
anymore?
Yeah,
well, sure, it's just started, you know. But, for example, the Chinese government said, look, the way this planet is run is crazy. They came up with a big thing on Xinhua. They're saying, instead, look, why don't we have harmony? Why don't we, you know, save the environment and seek mutual prosperity? And why are we killing each other?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to sum it up. And then here in Japan, a lot of things, for example, network TV, a government-approved channel, in prime time, ran a 911 TV show here.
Wow.
Just a couple weeks ago.
That's amazing.
Now, they cannot have done that without official central government approval.
From the top. Yeah, stand by, Ben. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Benjamin Fulford is on the phone, live with us from Japan. You're in Tokyo, right, Ben?
Yeah, Tokyo.
Okay, very good. Back in just a minute. Okay, it was 10 now. Benjamin Fulford estimates it's $13, $14 trillion that Asia holds in dollars. So tell us about the actual dumping of dollars. How's it being done, Ben? What's the mechanism? There are probably several, of course, but what's one of the primaries?
Well, okay. First of all, we had the announcement by the U.S. Treasury Department, I believe, that in August, Asian banks were dumping treasuries and at a record pace. The Japanese sold 4% of their entire holdings in 1 month. That's the highest since record keeping began. So that's one way. They say, well, we're not going to finance your killing machine anymore. It's morally wrong. We'll invest that money instead and maybe they don't just take it out of the United States. You see, one thing they can do, they can take their U.S. treasuries and sell them, and they can buy General Motors stock instead. There's no need to finance the killing machine. But they can also take it and put it in poor countries and help those countries get richer. They can take those dollars and they can spend them on protecting the environment. There's lots of things they can do, and they are doing. They're saying, look, you know, we're tired of all that money being spent to kill people. So we're going to take it. We're going to use it for the planet.
Are they also taking advantage of the collapsing American housing market and coming in here and buying housing, buying real estate, buying buildings, buying commercial, buying whatever?
I mean, does it really matter if someone in China or Japan owns an office building in New
York?
It's still going to be New Yorkers who are using it.
Hmm? Not to me. Doesn't matter to me. I'm just curious as to what your view of it is.
Well, okay, the real problem with the housing market, first of all, everything that you're seeing is because of this money being pulled out. That's what we're seeing is the surface effects of a deeper current. But the real problem with the housing market has been the fact that too many Americans are poor. And that's because of failed economic policy. The average male worker's salary in the United States peaked in 1973. That, by the way, is the year when a couple of top union bosses joined the Rockefeller's little clique there.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe that's a coincidence. But what they've been doing is fooling everybody by saying, talking about per capita GDP. And look how high it is. Look how rich we're getting. But if you're sitting in a cafeteria and Bill Gates walks in, well, the average GDP of that cafeteria is going to go way up. Bill Gates is going to start buying all the food, and nobody else can afford it anymore. And the people are saying, "Hey, well, you're richer now." I say, "Well, wait a minute. I can't even buy a donut now. What's going on here? What's going on is that average GDP is a con job. What they should be using as their measurement is gross mean product. That is the level at which 50% of the people earn more and 50% of the people earn less. And you'll find that level in the United States." $30,000, very close to the poverty line, whereas the per capita GDP is more than double that. So that shows you it's a system that has been designed to benefit a few ultra-rich at the expense of everyone else. And that is why people cannot afford to buy houses. It's that simple. So, and then the other thing is they've spent so much money and energy on this vast military-industrial killing machine, they can't afford to repair bridges or build schools or hospitals or, you know, go explore the universe. So it's a problem of failed, morally bankrupt economic management, and that can be traced directly to the Federal Reserve Board and those families that own it. They are racist barbarians, and they have to change their ways.
And if they won't?
If they won't, they will all, every single one of them, be wiped off the planet forever. That's the fact. They better realize it sooner than later. Right now the Asians are taking peaceful measures, but the Russians know about these people. The KGB knows. The South Americans know.
Well, the Russians have never forgotten. They remember the Bolsheviks and what happened
in
Russia.
Why do you think Chavez ordered all those high-powered sniper rifles? They know that they just got to take out 10,000 people to save the West from their insanity. And, you know, these people have to realize the game is up. It's over. Wake up, you guys. It's finished. Their whole idea of artificially carrying out biblical prophecy is insane. It won't work. The game is up. Furthermore, you know, what really bothers me about these people is that they're so stupid. Their own logic doesn't make sense. They say there is no God, that they are God, right? Yeah. They also think, some of them, this particular sect I'm talking about, the satanic sect, think they are the so-called chosen people. But if they don't believe in God and they think they're the chosen people, then somebody has to choose them. So either they behave in a way that everyone chooses them, or they cannot make their prophecy come true. There's nobody to choose them except us people.
That's
you know?
That's funny. That's so true. Who chose them, folks?
All right. Yeah, I mean, people aren't sheep to be manipulated and fooled, and you know, they're men. They need to be convinced and led. Like, if, for example, the Japanese people had conquered, say, Canada and tried to force me to learn Japanese, mm-hmm. Well, I would have gone into the hills and spent all my life killing Japanese. I would never let them force me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if I decide, okay, I think it's an interesting culture, I want to go there and study, then I do it with great eagerness, because mm-hmm. I chose to.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not forced on me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they have to realize, that if they give the world their best spiel and say, this is what we want to do in the future, then it'll work. But if they try to kill people, then the people are going to have to kill them back. That's the real problem. So Asia has woken up and said, enough is enough. But we've had a very fundamental change take place here. And if you think about it, they have a good case. Caucasian people, white people, whatever, are 17% of the world's population, and they control 40% of the world's GNP.
Mm-hmm.
The Asians are 65% of the world's population, and they control 40%. But all the international institutions, the World Bank, the IMF, the United Nations,
sure,
are controlled by not even really European people, but by a small elite of perverts. And that cannot continue. The post-war order is coming to an end. We have to find a new way of running this planet that's more sane. We have a crisis. We have the ocean being permanently damaged. We have 48 million people dying every year of starvation-related causes.
Right.
We have a Holocaust going on right now before your eyes in Iraq. This is not a normal situation. It's an emergency. And people need to realize that. The planet is in distress. And it's because of incompetent economic leadership.
So the average American has been led to think reflexively that the Chinese hate America for whatever reason. They don't understand that there has been a shift in Asia that you're describing, that it's not just an issue of wanting to conquer another country. It's an issue of apparently wanting to change the way we as a species do business on the planet. And if it requires war to do that, apparently the Chinese are going to put it on the table, and maybe the Russians as well.
Well, you see, everybody loves America, and everybody loves Americans, okay? That's a fact. They really do. You talk to the average Chinese, and they just love America. But they do not like your current government. They know the difference between a cabal of,
evil
versus the average American citizen. Everybody loves America, and they want to help America. That's what's going on.
They don't want war. Okay,
they
Ben.
They
see America and Americans in distress. They have pity for Americans caught in the grip of this evil. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and they want to help. You go to any street in China or Japan or Asia, mm-hmm, and ask people what they think about Americans. They say, oh, it's a great country. Love it. Hollywood, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You ask about the government, and they just suddenly say, well, that's horrible, horrible,
A lot of Americans are saying that, too.
Sure. I think the American people are waking up. At least the intelligent people are. And that's all that matters, I'm afraid to say.
Well, the rush for years was to change the school curriculum to dumb Americans down so much that there's nothing to wake up. Unfortunately for the controllers, the Internet came along, and it has attracted an ever-growing number of Americans who aren't quite intellectually dead yet and who know intuitively there's something really wrong, and they're looking to the Internet for the truth, or at least a reality check with which they can base their careers, lives, and help those around them. It's real simple. But
sure,
the war is on here, and it's a war of time. The controllers, I think, know that look at Ron Paul. The Ron Paul phenomenon is extraordinary. It is, in fact, the most extraordinary phenomenon I've seen, I think, of my time. His support is logarithmically exploding. It's geometrically exploding. It's all over the place. It cuts across party lines here. The controllers tried to marginalize him in the beginning, to hide him. They can't do that anymore. Now they're putting him on the major primetime programs like Jay Leno. He reached millions of people and maybe it picked up another million or two supporters. People are tired of the same old game. They know the two-party system is a joke. They're sick and tired of the criminals playing savior, like criminals like Hillary, Giuliani. You go right down the list. Ron Paul is a unique aberration on the entire political radar in the history of modern America. This is a very rare thing, and I don't know how he's being covered over there, but he's beginning to crack this system apart here.
Well, certainly, you know, I've told the Chinese secret societies and stuff that if Ron Paul is assassinated, that's it. That will trigger... Again, the Chinese and the Russians aren't going to fall for war. That's not what they're going to do. They're not going to fight the American army. They're simply going to assassinate the cabal of Satanists. That's it. They're not going to target anything except them.
Well, that's all it would take.
That's all it would take.
You keep mentioning 10,000 people would literally change the course of the entire planet. That's a pretty small price to pay. And in fact, every year on America's highways, 45,000 people are killed. So you lose 10,000?
Yeah, 6.7 billion versus 10,000. That's the situation we're dealing with.
All right. Stand by, Ben. We'll be right back. Another hour to go with Benjamin Fulford from Tokyo. You keep mentioning 10,000 people would literally change the course of the entire planet. That's a pretty small price to pay. And in fact, every year on America's highways, 45,000 people are killed. So you lose 10,000?
Yeah, 6.7 billion versus 10,000. That's the situation we're dealing with.
All right. Stand by, Ben. We'll be right back. Another hour to go with Benjamin Fulford from Tokyo. Okay, and we're back talking with Ben Fulford in Tokyo about the world economic crisis. The Toyota sales are up. Other Japanese businesses and Asian businesses, I guess, are doing very well. What does the Asian stock market say to this collapse, this credit crisis here in the West?
Well, generally speaking, they've come to the conclusion that Asia will not be that affected. They can... go sell their stuff in India and China. And
I read Europe. Somewhere that the Japanese market was up on all this, looking very good.
Yeah, sure. I mean, money's coming back here. People are saying, hey, well, if America's going to be in trouble, where are we going to park our money? Well, Japan's one place. But another thing I want to say, I the thing about Toyota and Chrysler.
Yeah.
The problem with U.S. corporate management is this obsession with profit. This is sort of like... Again, it's a result of propaganda coming out through from the Rockefellers via the Chicago School of Economics, etc. But the whole idea of only focusing on profits is very, very stupid and short-sighted. Imagine you're a landlord and you're renting an apartment building and you're getting high rents. You want to maximize profits. So the toilet breaks. And say, well, hey, I don't want to spend money on a plumber. I mean, that's expensive.
Right.
And they don't maintain the apartment. And eventually it becomes, a crack house. And finally it's condemned. And that's what happens if you don't think long term, think about the employees and the customers and the shareholders as a three-part system instead of just trying to extract everything you can as quickly as you can, which is what they've been doing. And as a result, they've weakened American industry and American corporations are managed according to a morally bankrupt philosophy. Mm. Toyota, their managers, they look at the whole planet and they say, okay, well, we got all these Indians and Chinese who are going to want to start buying cars soon. We don't have enough oil. And they think about the whole big picture before deciding what kind of cars to develop. And so they come up with hybrid cars. And the Americans are saying, well, hey, everyone's buying big, four-wheel drive, monster trucks. Why are they doing that? They don't look at the world. And so suddenly when the tide changes, and well, I didn't see that coming. It's not our fault. What is their fault? Mm-hmm. You're incompetent.
I remember about 6 or 7 years ago, one of the Ford family members took over Ford and had visions of doing things that made environmental sense and all the rest of it. They began to put these cars together and found that there was very little market for it. While gasoline was still 5 or 6 years ago, relatively cheap, people said, to hell with this, and Ford started to go into its decline. He had to give it all up, and they had to produce muscle cars and all the rest of it again. Now gasoline is going up. It's 93 a barrel. It's going to 100. It's probably going to 150. And then people are going to start thinking again, where do we go wrong here? But it was all in front of them, all the way along the road. There was no hidden barrier, nothing. It was right there. They just didn't want to see it.
Yeah, and also, I mean, everything is a question of timing. The guy was right, but he was doing it the wrong time. What the Toyota did was they developed all these stuff. They get the technology into high gear. But at the same time, if you're right now, they're buying monster trucks, so give them monster trucks. But we know, and we've got to be ready, quickly switch when they want hybrids. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to have foreign companies take over U.S. companies if they make things better. Another problem, again, with the U.S. is that by impoverishing their people, they have killed their market. They killed the goose that lays the golden egg. I mean, in the old days in the rural areas, you had these small towns with their shops and pretty high standard of living. And then they build a big Walmart, and suddenly all those little towns go bankrupt, and all these people with high-paying jobs are suddenly unemployed. Or they get, you know, a bare subsistence wages at Walmart. But at the end of the day, what happens is you don't have enough people to buy stuff because right. everyone's poor.
Right.
So, you know, it's the whole system that they run in economics is wrong. For example, I remember in economics class at university asking a professor, well, you know, what about nature? So, well, nature is not worth anything, according to economics. Well, what do you mean? Unless it's turned into a product. It has zero value according to how it functions now. Well, that is obviously nonsense by anybody's common sense.
Mm-hmm.
So by not looking at the big picture of life before deciding how to set the incentives, they create a system that functions like an amoeba. Everybody's personal gut instincts and desire is what runs this planet now. And it's eating everything. It's not a way to function as a species. And it's because everything has been camouflaged in this whole so-called economics and finance that people forget that it's human beings floating through space deciding what to do in the future and what to do now. And so that whole system needs to be torn down and rebuilt from scratch. And that's what's going on. And that's what the Asians decided to sort of force the Europeans and Americans to do.
How much common ground does this philosophy share with the communist Chinese, the Japanese, the Koreans, and the Taiwanese? I mean, is this just sort of floating in the ether, Ben? Because there are an awful lot of geopolitical obstacles, of course, in the way of a commonality. But is this something that is, are you sniffing this from Beijing and Seoul and Taipei? Are you getting it from all these places, or is this just something more intuitive on your part?
Well, it's kind of, actually, it's a decision they have made. I know I mentioned before this Chinese secret society. Well, they have woken up, and they're mobilizing Asian public opinion in a new direction. And they're saying, yeah, we've got a new paradigm here. Let's work on it.
Talking about here is Asian pride, among other things. They're tired of being used as a production center, as another whatever. They're now realizing that this, in fact, the Chinese have said, this is the century of the Asian.
And it's true. I mean, look, they're, like I said, they're 65% of the world's population, 40% of the world's GDP, and it's going to be much higher. But right now, they don't have any say in how the planet is run.
Except for
China, they're not in the councils, in the seats in the Security Council, right?
Right.
Eight of them, out of the five, four are Europeans. But Europeans are only 70% of the world's population. Why should they keep running the planet when they're doing such an incompetent job? Now, the other thing, I know the Europeans are worried, they're secretly worried that if we let these sort of colored people run the planet, everything's going to go down the drain and degenerate, you know. But that is not really true at all. And another thing I want to address is this guy Watson talking about blacks being inferior. Well, I want to talk about a minority group in the United States. This minority group has very high rates of teenage pregnancy, drug use, broken families, unemployment, people living on welfare. And this community is the Hmong minority from the Vietnam mountains of Vietnam. They're brought in after the Vietnam War.
The Hmong, H-M-O-N-G.
Yeah, the Hmong. And they're the same race as the Chinese or the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do not have is the cultural know-how to suddenly... They were slash-and-burn farmers, and they had a culture that was adapted to that. You suddenly dump those people in downtown Los Angeles, and, well, they don't know how to cope. They don't have the tools.
Vietnamese are different. Most Vietnamese, not the Hmong, but many Vietnamese are able to cope. They can cope very easily.
Sure, the Vietnamese, that's, again...
But the Hmong stay together. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, but the problem is also, I mean, as another example, is I was working as a youth in northern Canada, and I asked the guy there, so why don't you hire another native? He says to me, look, you hire a native to work 14, maybe 16 hours a day, who work harder than white men, who work like crazy for a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You'll get his paycheck, and you won't see him again for another year. Because they have a system... And, you know, they always had to quickly get all their year's stash of food in the fall when the salmon were running and stuff. So they have a culture adapted to that. And the rest of the year, you go on a Vision Quest or whatever, hang out with your friends, you know, whatever it is you want to do. And you can't take someone like that and suddenly put them in a cubicle 5 days a week. They're not going to adapt. They don't have that culture. So what does need to be done for places like Africa and stuff, if you want to start this new program to save the planet and develop everybody, is that you have to transfer... and cultural knowledge necessary without the unnecessary, you know, stuff to help these people with give them the tools they need to run a modern economy if that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Asians, the idea that they have is, you know, why don't we start like a big 3-year campaign to end poverty, stop, you know, environmental destruction, save the planet instead of all this killing. And I think it's a good idea.
Well, it sounds like a novel approach to me. I think it just might catch on if it's given half a chance.
I think Kennedy was trying to do something like that.
Something like that, yeah. There have been visionaries. Now, I go back again to Ron Paul over here, and apparently you're watching him fairly closely over there. He's getting some good media coverage, is he?
Yeah. No, people are quite pleased with this phenomenon.
It is a phenomenon. It's quite remarkable. And it's,
that would be the big change needed, you know, instead of getting power and stop all the military nonsense and take the power of the currency back to the people.
That 10,000 you talk about will attempt to take the whole thing down with them rather than willingly, voluntarily giving up their control. That's the big problem we face, and many American politicians over the years and the decades have been removed before they could threaten that control, and we are concerned about that here. Senator Paul Wellstone and his wife were murdered 5 years ago now for opposing the 10,000, as it were. So stand by, Ben. We'll be right back. Get your comment on that as we continue our conversation with Benjamin Fulford live from Tokyo. If you're listening, know the Chinese and Japanese are very well invested in space and space programs. How much pride is Asia taking in its accomplishments to date? And they are obviously going to only become more impressive.
Well, they see themselves as just about to take off. It's just beginning. It'll be something like we've never seen before. Already China's building the equivalent of one Manhattan a year. It will change the world.
They're also building a new heavy lift rocket, which will rival anything the Russians and the Americans have, and in a few years they'll be able to put enormous payloads in space.
Yeah, and I want to get back to that point before the commercial about these 10,000 people. Well,
sure.
In Latin America, when a politician gets corrupted, they're given a choice. El plomo o la plata, lead or silver. Either you get a bullet or you take bribes. And when you join the Council on Foreign Relations, it's the same. You join and you get fabulous power and prestige. If you leak secrets and refuse to join, we'll kill you. Well,
the movie star, Ben, hold on. The movie star, not that she ranks as one of my favorites, Angelina Jolie, has joined the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. I mean, like, we really care, but there's the point. She's now amongst the ruling elite, and she once you join, it's like the mafia. You don't get out. So she takes her act, and there she is.
But so what I figure is we make these guys an offer, the same offers they give to each, you know, either you get wiped out or you get richer by helping, you know, forge a whole new path for the planet Earth, one that does not involve war and racism. So it's their choice. They can either help turn this planet around in a wonderful new direction, or they can have the whole human species turn on them and remove them. It's that simple. I mean, they have two choices: prosperity and a whole new way of running the planet, or death. That's what Asia is offering them. And they had better listen.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a joke.
You made that very clear.
They have the intelligence. They know this is true.
Ben, you made that very clear on this program some months ago.
But they can. But the point is that you have to get them on your side. You get to, you know, and I know people say, well, they've done so much evil. How can you do that? How can you offer them an amnesty and a chance to do something new? Well, you know, the past is the past. I mean, they were born into this system. They had no choice. And you can't just keep looking at the past and past crimes. It's an endless whirlpool. You have to look into the future and say, all right, we'll just start with a whole clean slate, everybody. Just look ahead. Forget about, you know, who did what in World War II or, you know, who killed the Indians or, you know, who made slaves and whatever. Just forget all that.
We can't live in the past, right? Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was, as a kid in Mexico, people were prejudiced against me because of what the Spanish did to the Aztecs, you know, 400 years earlier.
I know, it's ridiculous. It's like running around with a huge millstone around your neck. For what? For what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so, but in any case, another thing I guess I should mention is when the Japanese just this week cut off oil for the U.S.
Army. The big story came out yesterday or the day before, yeah.
Yeah, that's, so far they've worked out about $80 billion worth of oil. So that's a pretty big blow to the Pentagon and this war in Iraq and this attempted war in Iran.
$80 billion?
Yeah, that's, you know, over the course of the Iraq War, that's about how much they got.
Wow.
So that's a big hit, and there's more to come. You know, but I believe that deep inside, these guys know that they have to change, and that this whole scenario they've been working on for all these years.
Well, they know they have to change, but they're going to try and weasel and squirm and worm their way around any way they can to avoid it for as long as possible. I think your point, though, is extremely impressive. That's very dynamic, and it's fascinating. 6.5 billion people on the planet, and maybe 10,000 really running the show.
Yeah, and if you look at
the American talk show gal Rosie O'Donnell, who people like to knock, said it very clearly that the American media is essentially run by four corporations now.
Yeah, four men.
Yeah, that has to change.
Yeah. I mean, even out here in Tokyo, the Foreign Correspondents Club, you have all these guys behaving that in ways that do not make sense if they were journalists, but would make sense if they're a CIA agent, trying to prevent the journalists from getting active and saying, but the professional journalists are finally saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, we're going to be out of a job unless we go back to our original ethic, which is to, you know, be the watchdog.
Well, the idea of journalism, as you well know, Ben, was to, at one point, collect as much diversity as possible, present it to the widest range of public as possible, and let the people make their own information, make their own decisions out of the pieces.
Yeah, and the other thing is the attitude that, old-style journalists had is when you go to a press conference, you think, okay, what is this liar going to lie about today? That's now, right. What they do is they're stenographers. They just take what they're fed and pass
right.
it on.
That's right.
They're not journalists anymore. They're just propagandists.
And they're message boys and message girls.
Yeah, and a lot of them, you know, resent that. And there are a lot of very intelligent people with smart minds. And in the professional journalism field, too, things are changing. They're saying, we're tired of being killed. And we're tired of, you know, we're going to lose our jobs if we keep pumping out this mush and propaganda. They're facing extinction, and they know it. There's a sense of crisis. I mean, the amount of correspondence has dropped dramatically, and a large percentage of the remainders are just government agents. So, you know,
All too true. And the government, of course, has spent, this government, a tremendous amount of money creating news out of thin air. Be right back with Ben Fulford after this.
Searching for UFOs.
Asian counterattack has begun. There can be no doubt. An Asian attack against the Illuminati has begun, says Benjamin Fulford. First of all, he says, Asian governments and central banks have begun a record unloading of U.S. Treasury bonds. Secondly, the Japanese government has stopped supplying the U.S. military in the Gulf and Afghanistan with free oil. Furthermore, the Chinese government has issued its response to the Illuminati philosophy of perpetual war by calling for global peace and harmony, as well as equality among the peoples of the planet. They have also made it clear 300 years of Illuminati rule must end. The Rockefeller and Rothschild counterattack with high oil prices and a global warming campaign is having little effect. If things continue this way, the withdrawal of Asian money will cause the U.S. economy to collapse. The EU economy will also be damaged because an ultra-high euro means they will not be able to export. The Illuminati plan to use Iran to start World War III has been seen through and will absolutely not succeed. The families that own the central banks of the West are in big trouble. My message to them is this: be grateful that you have not all been assassinated. The era of Asian peace is beginning. And our guest tonight is Benjamin Fulford. We've been talking for the last hour. Two sections to go here. Ben, what do you want to talk about next? I guess maybe the media is interested in all this, and you mentioned the press corps, but I'd like to get your take on the electronic media and how it covers it, too. But go ahead.
Well, I mean, the Internet is an amazing thing in that when you have a newspaper, the traditional newspaper, you have a gatekeeper, you have an editor, and then you have some rich guy who owns the paper, and they basically choose the information that everybody gets. So some very small group of men decide what goes into everybody's brains.
You got it.
Now, right. With the Internet, it's like the law of the jungle. Any guy can put out a blog, and then it's up to the sort of survival of the fittest blog, as it were, to rise up. And so it's people choose what they want to read. And it's a bottom-up system instead of top-down. So it's a total radical change in information. In fact, it's becoming almost like a mega-brain, you know, a communal knowledge. For example, if you ask 100 people to guess the weight of a cow, it's amazing how accurate it is. Mm. And so we're getting a collective mind being born here, something that's totally unprecedented in our history as a species. And it could be used in the future, for example, to make a democracy real-time and live. So instead of waiting every 4 years, you have constantly moving, very quickly reactive systems. It would be fundamentally different. So it is, you know, at first, when I first heard about blogs, I dismissed them. But, you know, now I realize, oh, my goodness, this is something totally amazing. And there still needs to be a breakdown of linguistic barriers. Translation software is not good enough. And so a lot of there's still too much of a gap between different cultures. I mean, if Americans really knew how the Chinese thought, they wouldn't be hostile to them or afraid of them. They would realize, hey, these are just ordinary people just like you and me, and all they want is, you know, peace and happiness just like us, and we have a lot to learn from them, they have a lot to learn from us. So let's be friends. I mean, that's what they would know if there was proper communication. Now, another thing I want to mention is, when I was a kid, I lived in Mexico. We knew this family. We had a cook, and she was sent, she was one of 21 children. She was sent at the age of 5 down to Mexico City to sell chilies and stuff. And she rose up in her world the highest she could, which is a cook for a foreign ambassador, or a foreign diplomat. And then her son went to medical school, and he set up shop in a shanty town, right, where the people made a living by digging through the garbage. And the people who dig through the garbage are not the poorest people in developing countries. They are ambitious. They'll even dig through garbage if they have to improve themselves. Hmm. And the son became, and the people in the neighborhood, when they had a sickness, they would bring whatever they could afford, chicken or nothing or whatever, you know, they felt they could do. Mm-hmm. And I watched this neighborhood go become middle class. And I see this doctor having children as doctors. Now, that's an example. What could happen if you take all these people in the developing countries who aren't even given proper nutrition, proper education, they become like half humans because they haven't had the chance to grow. It's like you take a tomato seed, identical tomato seeds, put one in, you know, ideal conditions, you get a huge plant, you put another one, you get a stunted dwarf, right? It's the mm-hmm. same seed, mm-hmm. but a different environment. So imagine if you woke up all human potential, get all 6.5 billion or 6.7 billion people at the highest level of education, knowledge, awareness. And then you let these people start improving themselves, even genetically, if they wish to. You're going to get a kind of an exponentially increasing wave of progress. It'll be something that would be so fundamentally different from what's taken place before that it could be worthy of being called the end of the world or the beginning of something so different and new that you just have to, you know, put a line and say, okay, this is before and after. That's the sort of change we're facing.
Hmm.
But these ruling class are so afraid of not having total control that they say, well, the only thing we can do is kill all these people, otherwise we're going to be overwhelmed. Well
that's why they've written about just that, reducing the world population by 80% or more.
That's nonsense. What they got to do is surf the wave and go along with it, not try to fight it. They can't. They're going against nature, and that never works.
If there is another attempt to release an Asian-specific virus, such as apparently was SARS, what are the Asians likely to do in immediate response?
I don't know, but they told me, and I'll repeat this, it'll be unpredictable and worse than expected.
Okay.
I mean, I can send an email, make a phone call, and say, you know, wipe out these 200 people, whatever, and it would be done. I'd rather not do that, but they have their own plans and their own things. And you got to remember, the Russians are in on this now, too, and the South Americans. It's not just a Chinese thing anymore. It's everybody in the world, except maybe the governments of the United States, Britain, and France, I would say at this point, mm-hmm. maybe, and Israel.
France has been co-opted, but we shouldn't count the French out completely. They're pretty tough, and they know what's happened to them. So.
Sure. No, I don't. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like they've been exposed, and the aware people of the planet know what's going on, and so it really is game over. It's just a question of how to present this to the public, especially the people who only watch television and only read, you know, sanctioned newspapers.
Yeah, that's true.
But right. It's over. It's changed. We've seen a fundamental turning point in human history.
Okay, hang on. Be right back with Ben Fulford in just a couple minutes. Citibank today, the inside story is, it lost about one-third of its value today. Something big is coming. Be right back. minutes with Benjamin Fulford, live from Tokyo. As you look at the so-called political process over here, with the exception, of course, of Ron Paul, Ben, what do the average Asian observers of this country see beside, I hope, the same old manipulation, the same Clinton-Bush cartel that is maneuvering to install Hillary for the next 8 years? You say it's over. The game here is being played with total control of the election process, from the electronic voting to what people don't understand even today, most Americans. It's not who wins the most votes that wins the presidency. It's the Electoral College, that throwback from two centuries ago, which can be manipulated as well. So I just don't know how you see it over there, but let me know.
Well, what Stalin said was, it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes.
And that's, somebody said that once, yes.
Yeah, I believe it was Stalin. But in any case,
it was Stalin.
Aware people here know that it's a rigged system, that it's controlled by money, and, you know, the Chinese see it as a system of manipulating the stupidest people in the country. You know?
Now, the Chinese, of course, are ruled by a ruthless dictatorship. Let's be honest about that. With a very powerhouse military infrastructure that literally projects all around the world, and thousands of companies that are operating internationally, multinationally, and abroad. This is anything but a republic, communist China. So,
well, yeah, but look at the United States. There's 7 million people in jail in the U.S., and China, with 4 times the population, only has 5 million people in jail. And they're both dictatorships, ruled by a small clique. But the difference is, in China, you see the dictators on TV every night. In the U.S., they stay hidden and fool people with this little sort of puppet show.
The Chinese leadership shows up on the television often, huh?
Yeah, well, they're visiting factories, or they're announcing new policies or whatever. So, you can see it. Now, personally, I think that there should be a system where everybody can control the political process real-time, live, through the Internet, a whole new paradigm of democracy using the new technology we have available.
Well, that's all well and good, Ben, but you certainly can appreciate the fact that that's exactly what the controllers would love to happen, because it would be even easier to control the outcome of the alleged free vote.
Well, I mean, obviously you need to have free flow of information. Right now, the reason why U.S. democracy does not function is these people control, first of all, they control everybody's food supply or money supply, right? They decide who gets to eat and who doesn't. Second, they control information. They decide what goes into your brain. Third, when it comes to the crunch, they can kill you. And it's that combination of powers they've used to keep their secret control. And that's falling apart because of the Internet, this whole Ron Paul phenomenon. I don't think Hillary's going to get elected. It's not going to happen.
There's more dirt in her closet than you could shovel out in a week. Agreed.
Yeah,
but she is their choice. Now, if Hillary falters, we can't forget who's standing in the wings to come on his white horse of CO2 emission reductions and save the world from global warming. Al Gore, standing by, waiting in the wings after the first of the year. If Hillary falters, if too much of her past criminal activity becomes impossible to hide, you got Al Gore, Prize winner for president.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you again, repeat what the representative sent to me by David Rockefeller, the guy who originally showed up off threatening to assassinate me, and then he became a messenger because, the Chinese showed up. And what he told me the last time we talked is that they realize the New World Order is not going to work. And instead, the plan is for a world government based on the EU with multipolar control. This is what they told me. I'm not saying I agree with it. And they said they would put Al Gore in president before Bush's term expired. And what they said is they did not want to end in such an ugly note. They wanted to end in a nicer way. They wanted a 2 or 3 year transition. But it may well be they're just trying to buy time and pull out this whole destructive armada they've been secretly building. And I know Al Gore is just a glorified nuke salesman, but at least if they do that, it's a sign that they're realizing that they've got to change their ways. And it would be better than nothing. And I wouldn't mind giving the guy a chance to see. Because what I've heard was that he was told that if he got elected in 2000, he would have to do that 911 thing. And he said, I don't want to do that. So he fought an election deliberately to lose. And that's why when, even though he won, despite trying to lose, he didn't fight the Supreme Court decision. It was because he knew these people would kill him and that they controlled everything. And so he said, all right. And he backed off. So I know that a lot of people that are still part of that same group, and he is, but I think that if they want to put him in power, it's their way of saying, look, let us go on a nicer note. Let us show what we can do. And it may be worth letting them do that. Although I'm fully aware of his entire Illuminati sort of, you know, connections.
Sure you are, and so are we. Absolutely. But your point is a good one. It's another possible scenario.
And the other thing,
but he is being kept on ice, I'm telling you, in case Hillary's past and present becomes an insurmountable embarrassment. And I think you'll see Gore step in after the first of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hillary's already starting to implode. I mean, the dirt's coming out.
Right, we've seen a lot in the last week. You're right. I've been watching it for 14 years, including Bill.
Yeah, I remember when she was first lady and Bill Clinton gave her the job of trying to set up a health care system. What a mess she made of that. Totally incompetent. It's something that displeased everybody. And it was complex and unwieldy and it just failed. And that's, if that's what she can do, then she's not good enough.
Well, she's a tool. I mean, that's obvious. Now, by the way, have you... a chance to see Michael Moore's Sicko over there?
I have not yet, but I know how totally messed up the healthcare system
is. Yeah, it's grim. But there's a funny little note in there, a little vignette of Hillary. She did try to put universal health care forward, retreated, and now apparently one of her biggest, if not the biggest, contributors was the healthcare big business monopoly. They paid her a huge amount of money in contributions and support. I think it's $700,000 or something.
You know, I was thinking of patenting a business idea, but I'll give it out for free right now. You have preventative health insurance, okay? And what this would be was this: a health insurance company would offer you vitamins and lifestyle advice and annual checkup. And if you follow their advice and live healthily, then you get cheaper insurance. And of course, then if you get sick, they lose money. So, in other words, they make money by keeping you healthy, by investing in preventative medicine. You can set up that kind of insurance plan, and then you could use the market would still do it, and they could lower costs enormously and extend life and make money too.
Right.
So, it's just a question of changing the paradigm, changing the incentive. As I mentioned before, right now, the sicker you get, the more money they make. And you go to the U.S. and you look at the statistics, you'll find that the more doctors there are per capita, then the more operations there are per capita. You got to remember that right now. So, say, you know, a dentist looks in your mouth. He doesn't see cavities. He sees, oh, okay, there's $200. Oh, here's $300. That's how it works now.
You can almost hear the, they don't use cash registers anymore, but yeah.
You know, I think I had a dentist actually deliberately cause one of my teeth to go rotten and have it pulled out so he could make money selling me a bridge. I think I clued on to it too late, but I just...
Listen, there are unethical people in every practice, and why not? The medical business, though, and the big pharmaceutical control is enormous. Now, a lot of those internet pharmacies are, of course, out of Asian markets. The Chinese make a tremendous amount of medicines and vitamins, which are shipped back here. You know the scandal about the Chinese products that has been...
Sure. I mean, they've had problems ever since the age of the emperor.
Are they serious about trying to correct that, or is this sort of an asymmetrical effort to cause us a little bit of duress over here?
They're serious, but it's hard to do. I mean, you know, it's a huge country, and there's all sorts of people there who cut corners to make a buck just like there are anywhere else.
Right.
But they are serious. But another thing about the pharmaceutical industry, and my suggestion for them right now is they have a huge taboo, okay? This taboo is that they cannot develop drugs just to make people more intelligent or stronger or have great pleasure. And So this forces them to create new illnesses or new definitions of illness, right? So they can start, you know, I think, why not let them free? And why not, if you can have a drug that makes you feel good and isn't bad for you, well, why not, you know? Let them develop it. I mean, why do they have to hold all that back? Why not make something that makes you...
Well, they have those now. They're called the illegal drugs, and, of course, they're in that, too. The governments are bringing those in. Old news.
Yeah, they don't want competition, but, I mean... The illegal drugs, a lot of them have very bad side effects. They can make it without side effects.
So do legal drugs. I mean, SSRIs, antidepressants, all of those things are absolutely devastating to the brain. Ritalin for children and so forth. All right, we're almost out of time, Ben. Wrap it up for us here in 30 seconds. What do you want to leave us with tonight?
All right, what I want to say is that, it has started. The Asians have started to take action. You'll see more and more interesting stuff happening. We've reached a turning point, and it'll get more interesting as we go on. One paradigm is ending, a new one is beginning. That's basically the conclusion I have.
Okay, all right. We're going to talk to you more often on the program, maybe once a month, to get an update as you see things from over there and to help us learn more about the whole Asian paradigm, as you call it, which has changed. And things, you're right, things are happening at a very rapid rate. I don't think they want to wait around for 10 or 20 years for this to change on its own. I think they're going to make it and force it. I think they're very shrewd, and you know that more than I, but it's fascinating.
Yeah. 2 to 3 years, Max.
Okay. Ben, thanks a lot for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night. Benjamin Fulford from Tokyo. All right. It's our program tonight, and we'll be back tomorrow night. Have a good day tomorrow. Remember, the food is toxic in most cases. You've got to wake up. You've got to go organic. And you're going to need to be taking good supplements every day. More about that soon. See you tomorrow.